Tonight, the showdown in New Hampshire's 1st congressional district. The incumbent Democratic Congresswoman Carol Shea Porter, her Republican challenger, former Congressman Frank Ginta. The two are facing off for the 3rd straight election. The NH1 debate starts right now. Good evening. I'm NH1 political director Paul Steinhauser. Welcome to the 2nd of 4 straight nights of crucial debates in the Granite State Senate, gubernatorial, and congressional elections. Tonight, the race in New Hampshire's 1st congressional district. Let's introduce our candidates. Democratic Congresswoman Carol Shea Porter grew up along New Hampshire's seacoast. She was a social worker, community activist, and teacher before first being elected to the House of Representatives in 2006. Shea Porter, who lives in Rochester, is 61 years old. Frank Ginta worked in the insurance business and started his own consulting firm before being elected to the New Hampshire State House in 2000. He also served as a Manchester alderman before being elected mayor of New Hampshire's largest city. He's 41 and lives in Manchester. Now, let's be honest, there's a history between these two candidates. Ginta defeated Shea Porter in the 2012 election, knocking her out of Congress. She returned the favor in 2012, and here we are 2 years later with what many are calling the three-peat. How will it work tonight? Each candidate will get 1 minute to respond to the questions asked to them. Their opponent will be allowed 30 seconds of rebuttal time. Joining me in asking those questions tonight are NH1 anchor Kiki Wenzel, Laura Kanoy, host of The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio, and Howard Altshuler, executive editor of the Portsmouth Herald. Before we start, I'd also like to thank our other partners in tonight's debate, The Telegraph of Nashua, Foster's Daily Democrat, The Laconia Daily Sun, and the Rudman Center at the UNH School of Law. Let us begin. With some 4,700 civilian employees, the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard is among the largest employers along the seacoast. The shipyard was nearly shut a few years back as part of the Defense Department's base closings. What more needs to be done to make sure it's not on the chopping block in the future, and what's your vision for the shipyard going forward? And Congresswoman, let's start with you.
Well, thank you, and I'm delighted to be here. Let me say that what needs to be done, we have already done. We invested heavily in the shipyard, made sure that they had the funding that they needed so that they would be ready for the Virginia subs. And we also did a lot of funding for the shipyard. And just recently, in our National Defense Authorization Bill, my committee, the Armed Services Committee, put in that there would be no BRACs, that they would not be able to close that shipyard. So we've been taking care of that. When I go to the shipyard, I'm always delighted to see those cranes there. I know people are hard at work.
Congressman Gitt.
Well, thank you very much, Paul, for the question. The Portsmouth Naval Shipyard is not just a shipbuilding location here in the state of New Hampshire, one of four in the country, but it's also an economic engine for the state of New Hampshire. And it's something that I will continue to protect and ensure that I would always oppose a BRAC. We have some of the best and finest men and women who are working there at the shipyard, who are building under budget and within the time limits given by the federal government. They deserve the support, not just from the state of New Hampshire, but from Maine and Massachusetts as well. And I'll continue to work with the regional delegation to ensure that no BRAC process ever takes away the opportunity that we have here with our shipyard.
People along the seacoast will be pleased to hear both of those answers. For our next question, let's go to Laura.
Thanks a lot, Paul. And as Paul said, both of you have run for this office several times before. By 2016, one of you will have held this office for the past decade. The National Journal did a story on your race, calling it a three-peat, and mentioning that many First District voters were getting a little tired of having the same two candidates year after year. So here's my question. If you are elected to this office, what new spirit, what new ideas, what new approach will you bring to it that you haven't brought before?
Congressman, let's begin with you.
Well, thank you, Laura, for the question. And I've learned through the years in my service to the state of New Hampshire, whether it's a state rep, an alderman, mayor of our state's largest city, or as a member of Congress, that the most important thing I can do is listen to the state of New Hampshire, bring New Hampshire values to Washington, ensure that there is a bipartisan approach so we can get the country moving forward again. I've been able to do that in the past, whether it was as mayor of Manchester working with a majority of Democrats, or when I served in Congress, getting three bills signed into law by this president. I think people of our state want to see action, want to see the economic growth that they've been desperately needing over the last 6 years. And I'll bring that energy and that bipartisan approach to make sure that I always work on behalf of the people of our state.
Congressman.
Well, I'm going to continue to work on jobs. While the economy has definitely been recovering, we still have a lot of people who can't find work. So I think growing this economy is going to be my focus, and concentrating on small business, making sure that we take care of Main Street instead of Wall Street. The other thing that I did and will continue to do is try to undo the damage that Mr. Ginta's vote on the sequester did to the shipyard and other places. And I was successful in undoing one-third of the sequester because we compromised and we passed a bipartisan budget, which certainly helped. But we have work to do on that. We need to continue growing this economy. We need to address the problem of education, how expensive it is for young people and their families. And we need to deal with a host of other problems that we're facing. I'm on the Armed Services Committee, and I plan to continue working to make sure that this country is safe and that we take care of our military men and women and our veterans.
Congressman, do you want to respond at all?
Yes, you know, Congresswoman Shea Porter always references the sequester, and I'd remind the audience that it was the president and Harry Reid, the leader of the Senate, who required and demanded the sequester to be included in a budget agreement. Otherwise, the government would have been shut down. So if you hear Congresswoman Shea Porter to speak on this particular issue, she would have voted to shut down the government rather than try to work with the Senate and the president. Nobody likes the sequester. It was a very difficult position that the president and Harry Reid put the House of Representatives in, but we got through that process. We passed an agreement on the budget, and then I voted three times to find other reductions in spending throughout the federal government to replace the sequester. Unfortunately, the Democratic Senate refused to take up any of those three bills.
Congresswoman, do you want a short response?
I do. Actually, it was Frank as a Tea Partier and all the other Tea Partiers that arrived in 2010 that forced this deal on. And if he didn't like the sequester, he didn't have to continue that budget slashing by supporting the Ryan budget. But the reality is what I'm hearing him say is that he agreed with the president and the president agreed with him on the sequester. Well, I don't agree on the sequester. I think it did great damage. And we know that we had a head start shut down. We know that it hurt community health centers. We know how much it hurt New Hampshire, so I would not support the sequester.
Well, I did not agree with the president on demanding a sequester cut. What the president did was said, if you do not pass the sequester cuts, the government will be shut down. So to hear Congresswoman Shea Porter, she would have shut down the government. That is not responsible. What the president did and what the Democrat-led Senate did was not responsible. And it held the House of Representatives into a terrible situation because they refused to work with us on a reasonable, responsible budget. Again, I voted three times to replace those sequester reductions. And we found savings within other areas of the federal government. And unfortunately, the Senate refused to take up that legislation.
Congressman, a short answer, and then we can move on.
I'm astounded at the rewriting of history, but let me just say that the Ryan budget and the sequester was not severe enough for this congressman when he was there. He also voted for the Republican study group budget, which was the Ryan budget on steroids. And actually, Republicans had to come together because Democrats only voted present. They forced Republicans to say no to Frank Ginta and the Tea Partiers in Congress. So your budget was actually more severe. The Republican study budget was far more severe than the Ryan budget, and yet you supported it not once but twice.
You know, Paul, we're going to hear from Congresswoman Shea Porter through the course of this evening, calling me a Tea Partier, telling people that I'm supported by the Koch brothers. These are approaches that she takes to try to malign who I am, the service that I've offered our state. I want to go to Washington to work with both sides, Republicans and willing Democrats, to move the country in the right direction. I think people who are listening this evening want to hear about policy, substance, and the direction we're going to take the country.
Congresswoman
Shea Porter tries to focus on substance rather than name calling.
Well, actually, that was policy, and that's why that's important. And, you know, I think if you believe in it and you vote for it, you should stand here and defend it. So we're talking about policy.
Thank you both. In your 2010 election, in your 2012 election, health care was a major issue. We're in 2014. It is, again, a major issue. And, Howard, you have a question.
First, good evening to both of you, and thank you for being here. My first question is about the Affordable Care Act, also popularly known as Obamacare. And it's one question, but there's different pieces of it for each of you. Congresswoman Shea Porter, you make no apologies for your vote in favor of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Some critics of the ACA object to the provision requiring all people to either buy health insurance or pay a fine. Why do you support requiring everyone to pay into the system? And Congressman Ginta, you repeatedly voted to repeal Obamacare. What would you replace it with? And if you want to keep the popular parts, such as pre-existing conditions, how will you pay for them?
Congresswoman, let's begin with you.
With me?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, thank you for that question. And the reality is that this health care law brought so many people health insurance, affordable health insurance, and it's also been helping hospitals and doctors to be more efficient. But here's the thing about what you just asked. This was a Republican idea, and they wanted people to pay for insurance. They didn't want people going to the emergency room without health insurance and then all of the rest of us having to pay for that. They actually called it no free ride. So when we started to work on health care, and Republican presidents and Democrat presidents tried to do this for years, when we started working on health care, we adopted the Republican idea that people should pay, but we knew that some couldn't. And so for those who can't, there are subsidies to help them. So I think it was a very fair way to do this, and I commend the Republicans who came up with that idea, because it really has worked.
Congressman Ginta.
Well, I think it's clear that the state of New Hampshire does not support Carol Shea Porter's notion that Obamacare is working. She supported it when it was first came to the floor. She has double down on this piece of legislation, and the state of New Hampshire continues to oppose this piece of legislation. Congresswoman Shea Porter is not listening to the constituents of the 1st Congressional District. So far, in 4 years, we've had 22,000 people lose their health insurance. Just Sunday, in a USA Today article, 70,000 more people in November in the state of New Hampshire are going to have their insurance canceled. And this is a policy that Carol Shea Porter says is working.
Congressman?
It is not working. It should be repealed and replaced.
And what would you replace it with?
There are a whole host of things that we can do. Let's start, number one, with allowing anyone, individuals or small businesses, to purchase across state lines, anywhere you want in the country. Immediate new markets for the individual, the small business owner, or the nonprofit. Secondly, we have to have transparency. When you provide the actual cost of a procedure to an individual and you provide them choice, they will start to choose the lesser of the cost, and that will pay for a lot of the things that Howard asked for in his original question.
Congressman?
Third, you can allow like businesses and nonprofits to pool together to build their purchasing power. We do those three things, we can change to a market-based system.
Congressman, a short response?
Yes. PolitiFact said that what Frank Ginta is saying is not true. PolitiFact said that they did not lose their health insurance. They rated that true when I said that, and I'm very, very pleased and proud of that, because it is telling the truth. What happened there was Anthem was the only insurance company there, and Anthem tried to do that. It wasn't Obamacare. Anthem tried to do that. I worked with Anthem, and they agreed to keep those policies going. So it's not true, and you can look it up on PolitiFact. And as for your idea about putting everybody together, we have that. And that is going to be coming forward in 2016. And it's a compact to allow states to do exactly that. So I'm glad that you support that idea, because that's exactly what we did in the ACA.
Thank you both very much. Let us move to another issue, which has been a top story in the news the last couple of weeks. And for that, let's go to Kiki.
Thanks a lot there, Paul. I have a question tonight for both candidates. The spread of Ebola has become a major public health concern recently. What do you think of the government response so far, and what steps do you think should be taken to stop its spread?
Congressman, let's begin with you.
Well, I think the response by this president, this administration, has been terrible. There is fear across the country that this is going to spread. Number one. Number two, the CDC unfortunately hasn't been able to properly take care of its own physicians and medical teams that are trying to help the patients who are possibly affected. Third, the President of the United States has now politicized this process with his appointment of another czar. We're back to having czars again in this country, and it's a person with no medical background whatsoever. It's purely political. So things have to change immediately. You need a travel ban immediately. It should have been done weeks ago. And this president refuses to take those basic steps. And I hope that he does so we can get on the other side of this terrible tragedy here that could spread in the United States.
Congresswoman?
Well, I think the president and the administration was pretty flat-footed at the beginning, and we certainly should have at least been taking the temperatures. I do think that we should have a ban on non-essential travel for a week or two or 3 weeks in those three countries that are having the difficulty, because we need to get a handle on this. And I thought the CDC response initially was too slow, and I was pretty surprised that they didn't show up right away to help that hospital there. But you know, there's also some responsibility here. We don't have a Surgeon General because Republicans are holding that up in Washington, and we don't have the funding that we need for the Center for Disease Control because Washington Republicans cut that, including Mr. Ginta. And we don't have the proper funding for the National Institutes of Health for the same exact reason that Republicans in Washington cut that, and that would be Mr. Ginta again. So we shouldn't be sitting there saying it's all political. You know, we just heard Mr. Ginta say it's all political. This is really serious. This is something we shouldn't be fighting over. This is something that should be properly funded. We should take care of this. And I feel very comfortable saying that the president and the administration should have done more faster. And I think, you know, that Frank Ginta should feel comfortable saying, yeah, that he screwed up by cutting the funding there.
A short response, I would assume.
Well, I remind Carol that she is the member of Congress and she has served for 6 years. She has had the opportunity to try to work with Republicans and Democrats to craft responsible budgets. She has declined. She has focused on supporting budgets that have massive tax hikes that would hurt American families, the very families that we're trying to get out of economic challenges here in the country. And the reality is that the president's and his administration's response to this has been nothing short of terrible. It was a simple question, simple answer.
Well, actually, we did pass a bipartisan budget. We compromised. We passed it. The Senate did also. So we have a bipartisan budget, and I'm very proud of the work that we did together.
Congressman, thank you. Let's change gears here and take a question from Michael Kitch of the Laconia Sun.
Disparities of income and wealth are wider than at any time since the 1920s. Despite steady gains in productivity, real wages have not risen significantly in three decades. Low-paid jobs represent a greater share of employment than in any other industrial democracy. The median income is slightly above its level in 1995, while the incomes of the most affluent 5% have risen 15% since then. What do you make of these numbers, and how do you think government should respond to them?
Congresswoman, let's start with you.
I think it's heartbreaking, and you're absolutely right that the middle class wages have been very flat, and we've had a recovery, but the recovery has benefited those in the top 1%, the millionaires, the billionaires, and the corporations. So what we need to do is first raise the minimum wage. Some people are concerned and say that they're afraid that that would somehow or another, you know, upset our economy. But the reality is, and I've read a number of reports about it, economists say that they actually would help, because people who live close to the edge will take their money right downtown and spend it there. They won't ship it off to Ireland or elsewhere. They will spend it on the economy. And since our economy is 70% consumer driven, people need to have money in their pockets in order to go purchase. And it's the purchasing power that moves the economy forward. So it would be good to raise the minimum wage. We see families working two jobs and still not able to make it. So that's one thing that we can do. The other thing is that we really need to grow this economy, and you have to grow the middle class to do that. I think we should reward companies for bringing jobs home. We lost too many jobs overseas. We need to stop the subsidies that help them to stay there, but give them tax advantages when they come back. So I think it takes a concentrated effort. We need a jobs bill. I've been saying that for a long time. We need to build infrastructure that will create jobs as well. So we have a lot of work to do.
Congressman, your response.
Well, Carol Shea Porter has been in office for 6 years, and she has not been able to deliver on the very promise that she made almost 6 years ago to try to help middle-class families. She has not been able to do anything of substance economically, with the exception of voting for the stimulus bill, which was $800 billion that didn't stimulate the economy. We have a larger long-term debt now at $18 trillion. It was almost half that when she first took office. And she continues to talk about ideas but can't seem to implement anything. I don't think many people feel in this state or in this country that we've had a recovery. We have the highest number of people out of work, and the labor participation rate is at its absolute lowest in history.
Congresswoman, a very short response. If you want it, then we need to go to commercial.
Yes, we actually did raise the minimum wage, and we did create jobs. And you see the economy getting better. The deficit is much lower this year than it was. So we're on the right track. And I worked for that legislation and helped pass that. And a number of small business provisions. Remember, this country almost went into a depression. And it was our work that saved the country from falling into depression and has brought us back. We've had 50-plus months of job gains.
Thank you both. From attack ads to gun control, we have lots more to talk about tonight. Our NH1 debate continues in a moment. Welcome back to the NH1 debate in New Hampshire's 1st Congressional District. The Ginta campaign went up with a new TV ad yesterday that criticizes the Congresswoman. Let's take a listen to that commercial.
Carol Shea Porter wants to make sure we know who she stands for.
So you know who I stand for.
And that's why Shea Porter voted to collect her salary even if Congress doesn't pass a budget.
So you know who I stand for.
And she voted to give members of Congress first-class travel and health care for life.
So you know who I stand for.
That's right, Carol. We do know who you stand for. That's why we need a change.
I'm Frank Ginta, and I approve this message because it's time to put people first.
Congresswoman, I would like you to address those claims and give you a chance to respond.
Well, let me say, I'm shocked because on Thursday up in North Conway, he was saying that he was only going to run positive ads. So, but I'm not really shocked because it is part of the business. But what really disappoints me, though, is that he used something that's completely inaccurate. And the Washington Post gave it 4 Pinocchios, meaning it's a really, really big lie. So, and Frank Ginta actually voted for the same thing because what this is, it's a poison pill in a Ryan budget. Of course I'm going to vote no on the Ryan budget. That would hurt the middle class. And I have to say, in all fairness, the Democrats have put it in and tried to put a poison pill in for him too. So, you know, don't use that stuff. That's just political silliness, that's all. Not true for Pinocchios.
Congressman, I'm going to give you a chance to respond in a minute, but first, let's take a look at your ad. He's also running right now on New Hampshire TV, a new spot from the Shea Porter campaign that goes after you. So let's take a look.
Back in the 50s, women's rights were restricted.
She's a woman, isn't she?
Equal pay? Forget about it.
I thought you appreciated all I've done here.
Sadly, my opponent Frank Ginta is stuck in the 50s. He's never once stood up for equal pay. He voted to defund Planned Parenthood and opposes a woman's right to choose, even to save a mother's life. I'm Carol Shea Porter. I approve this message because letting Frank Ginta take us back to the 50s is the wrong direction.
Not a chance.
Well, Carol Shea Porter had a chance to respond to your ad. It's time for you to respond to her ad.
Sure, I got a kick out of that ad as well. I know most people at home are probably frustrated with the number of negative ads for the first 4 weeks of this general election campaign, starting from the evening of the primary victory back in September. Carol Shea Porter was running negative ads as well as the Democratic Party against me. And at some point, you know, I've asked her to take them down. She declined. So at some point, you've got to respond. What I really want to focus on is what I think people want to hear about most: jobs and economy, getting the budget balanced, moving the country forward, and trying to find positive solutions for the state and the country. And that's where I'll continue to focus my efforts.
I want to keep this conversation going. And for that, let's go to Howard.
We'll stay on the same topic. What's the most unfair criticism that's been leveled at you during this campaign by your opponent or independent groups supporting your opponent? Why is it unfair, and what's the truth?
Congresswoman, let's begin with you.
Well, I think the suggestion that somehow or another I am not for the middle class, that probably is the one that I would say is the most unfair. I have spent my life working for the middle class. I have spent my life working with seniors for seniors. So hearing that nonsense about, you know, I would be cutting Medicare, I'd be doing this or doing that, it's not who I am. It's not what I've done with my life's work. So that probably would rate up there. But, you know, we all know not to get offended too much by this. Let me point out that we understand that this is part of it. The first ad of the whole political cycle was run against me by Frank's party about the second week after I'd gotten back in January of 2013 or early February 2013. So, you know, it happens. I did ask Frank if he would sign a statement with me asking third parties to stay out of New Hampshire and let us just talk to New Hampshireites, and he declined. I asked him last time too, and he declined. And this is what happens. You know, it comes in and it's tough. But we know how to deal with this. We can't get emotional. We can't get upset about this. So I just look at it, and all I want, Frank, and I think you did a good job this time, is put a good picture of me. And I did like those pictures, so I want to thank you for that.
Well, Congressman, I'm going to let you respond to the Congresswoman, but also to answer the question, what was the most unfair criticism?
Well, so far, just about every ad that Carol or the Democrats have running are distortions of who I am personally and my record. So that's why you campaign vigorously, try to meet as many people as you possibly can to talk about how you're going to move the country in the right direction and be reflective of what people want in the state of New Hampshire, which is, again, focusing on job growth, economic growth, balancing our budget, things that Carol Shea Porter for 6 years in office has not been able to deliver for the state of New Hampshire. That's why I think we need a change.
Congresswoman, do you
want
to
one of the things
response?
That you learn to do is to pivot, but the reality is that Frank Ginta did say no abortion, not even to save a woman's life. He did vote to defund Planned Parenthood, and there is a bill called Paycheck Fairness, and he never voted for that, or signed up, I should say, because it didn't come to a vote, but he never co-sponsored it. So, you know, there's nothing wrong in that ad. It's all factual.
Congressman, 15 seconds, and then we're moving on.
Again, the ads that Carol and her team have put out are distortions of my record, and I'll continue to focus on helping the middle class, moving the things that Carol Shea Porter has not been able to do in the 6 years that she served our state.
Thank you both. Let's change gears right now and go to Laura.
Thanks, Paul. And I want to ask both of you about gun control. After the massacre of 26 children and educators at a Newtown, Connecticut elementary school in late 2012, a bill was introduced in the U.S. Senate to expand the national gun background check system to private sales at gun shows and on the internet, basically making these sellers follow the same rules that licensed firearm dealers already follow. That bill failed, but here's the question. Should all these groups of gun sellers be subject to the same rules and regulations? And if not, why not?
Congressman, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think we need to respect the Second Amendment. It's 27 words that are, I think, shouldn't be changed or modified. And I think people in the state of New Hampshire take that seriously. We have to focus on criminals. That's what I did when I was mayor. I was a tough-on-crime mayor and was able to focus our resources on adding police officers, providing more programs to get rid of criminals. That's what we need to be focusing on. Focus on the criminal, not the good citizen who, again, is abiding by the law. And I think that there's another clear difference between myself and Carol Shea Porter. She does not support the Second Amendment, wants to restrict gun rights on individuals here in the state of New Hampshire, and that's out of touch with what New Hampshire wants.
So that's a no on the regulations.
I think we need to focus on criminals. Eliminate the criminal, and you will see a reduction in crime, like I was able to accomplish when I was mayor of our state's largest city.
Congresswoman.
Well, of course I support the Second Amendment. I'm fine if people want to own a gun to hunt. I think if they want to defend their home, if they want to collect guns, I'm fine with that. And I'm also fine with family members being able to give each other guns and do that. You know, we grew up in New Hampshire. We know plenty of people who hunt or who live in a rural area and feel like they need support there and protection. And I am fine with that. But Frank says that he wants to go after criminals. Well, the only way to do that is to find out if they're buying guns. So it's a NICS check. A NICS check, it only takes a few minutes. And, you know, New Hampshire citizens are law-abiding. But it's like this. If you go into an airport and somebody says to you, 60% of you have to go through the metal detector and 40% of you can walk around it, you'd say, no, I think they should all walk through it. Even though I'm very certain almost every single person is law-abiding, I just want that extra certainty. And that's what this is, too. At gun shows, we need to know who they are, because there's no other way to find these guns that criminals have or people who should not be having guns because they might harm themselves or others. It's very simple, and I think we should do it.
Why don't we move on to an issue that is being debated in Congress. It's been debated for a couple of years, and for that question, let's go to Kiki.
Thanks a lot, Paul. Another question tonight for both of the candidates. Congresswoman Shea Porter, do you think illegal immigrants should be required to return to their country of origin before they are eligible for citizenship? And Congressman Ginta, as an opponent of the DREAM Act, what do you think should be done with the young children of immigrants who came here illegally?
Congresswoman, let's begin with you.
Okay, I think if people come over the border now and they're not refugees, yes, they should be sent back. But for people who have been here and have settled their families here and have lived here for a long time, I support exactly what Kelly Ayotte, our U.S. Senator, who's a Republican, and U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen supported in the Senate. So we need a reform for those, and we have to make it difficult for people. We have to make sure they speak English, they pay fines, that they spend a long time, you know, working their way towards it, that they understand the citizenship, etc. But we can't round up 11 million people and send them back. Even if we wanted to, we couldn't do that. So rather than create this permanent subculture or have them in the shadows, we need to bring them out. And I admire and praise the Republicans in the Senate who voted for this, because we all know that we need immigration reform and it will make this country safer. It's beefing up our borders and doing so much more, so it'd be good.
Thank you, Congressman.
Well, there's a couple things that we need to do. First of all, New Hampshire relies on H-1B and H-2B visas. We need to update that process so you can provide more access to the North Country for those individuals who want to come here legally, work here during a seasonal job or a longer period of time. Those are things that have to be done that should be updated. Secondly, we have to close the border. Carol Shea Porter has said nothing about the notion of closing the border, stopping what the problem is, which is this flow of illegal immigrants coming across the border. And it's because I believe that she supports the DACA order that the president issued not once but twice. We've had now 400,000 people illegally come across the border. It's not right. It's not keeping our country safe. And it hurts us economically. So that can be rescinded. I've called for the rescinding of that DACA order. She refuses to. But let's start with closing the border and not making the problem worse.
And specifically with the DREAM Act and the young children of illegal immigrants?
I think let's start with closing the border first, and then we can determine what to do with those individuals who are here. But again, we have to stop the problem from continuing to grow, and that means closing the border. That has not been done. That's a clear difference between myself and Carol Shea Porter.
Okay, do you want a quick response?
Yes, actually, Frank actually voted to cut the funding for border, and I actually voted to support it. But he's mixed up about the DACA, because that is deferred action for children. And so they had to have been in this country before 2007. This is not applying to people who are arriving now. So it's not because of DACA that you're seeing people cross over the border. And we do need to close the borders.
Well, Paul, it sends a message. The DACA order sends a message to anyone who wants to cross the border. What's happening is drug lords are getting payment of $6,000 for an individual to come across the border illegally. So, you know, the DACA order is exactly why this is happening. That should be rescinded. She refuses to call for rescinding it. I've called on the president to do that. Again, a clear difference between the two of us.
Thank you both very much. From ISIS to education, we've got a lot more ground to cover. The NH1 debate continues in a moment. Welcome back to the NH1 debate in New Hampshire's 1st Congressional District. Developments in the Middle East have been a top story the last couple of weeks, and for that I want to go to Howard for a question.
Thank you, Paul. You've both said you don't support boots on the ground in Iraq or Syria,
and that you don't support arming Syrian rebels to combat ISIS. Can you envision any turn of events that would warrant the U.S. sending in-ground troops, say, for example, ISIS capturing Baghdad?
Congressman, let's begin with you.
Well, Howard, thank you for the question. I didn't support the legislation that came to the floor of the House arming the Syrian rebels, training them. I didn't think it was a complete plan. What I'd like to see is real leadership from the President of the United States. He needs to articulate what a plan is to Congress. There needs to be an up or down vote on whether we are going to actually go to war or not. I think most people feel like we actually are at war at the moment, but you need to follow the War Powers Act in order to follow the Constitution and follow the obligations of the legislative and the executive branch. If I were to see something from the president that was clear and definitive, that recognized a plan to eliminate ISIS, then that's something I could vote for, but I haven't seen that from the president yet.
And if Baghdad fell, hypothetical, would that be a situation where you would consider boots on the ground?
Well, again, I think you need to see what the plan from the president is. What I'd like to see is continued airstrikes from the United States, cooperative relationships with our friends in the region and around the world, for them to help with boots on the ground, led by American forces, of course. But again, you need to see this from the president. The president has not provided leadership and has not provided a true plan to the Congress yet.
Congresswoman.
Well, here's something that Frank and I agree on. I think we should have been called back and had a very vigorous debate so the American public could see and hear and have that vote. So I said no to arming the Syrian rebels, moderates, because we don't really know exactly who they are. Their alliances change daily or weekly, and Syria's in the middle of a raging civil war. And once they decided to go ahead, and because they did vote yes to arm the Syrian moderates, one of the first things one of them said was, I don't want to go after ISIL. I want to go after Assad, because remember, they're fighting Syrian president as well. So we can't put ourselves in the middle of that. I think it would be a disaster for us to do that. What we do need to do, and we can do, though, is to build a very strong coalition with countries in the region and other countries as well. And that's been happening. They are building what I consider to be a real solid coalition. I support the airstrikes. I think that's the right thing to do to help. And I think that we certainly can help arm the Kurds, because they're really fighting very hard. We see what they're doing in Kobani. So I support helping, but we should not have our troops there. We should ask the countries in the region that are geographically a lot closer to, and understand the culture a lot better than we do, to take that up. And, you know, the Iraq soldiers really need to step up. We saw what happened after we had paid all of that money and all the treasure and the blood that we gave to that country. They need to step up. Turkey needs to step up. Saudi Arabia and other countries need to lead.
Thank you both very much. Let's definitely shift gears here and bring it back to the U.S. And for that, I want to go to Kiki for a question.
Thanks a lot, Paul. Now we're going to talk education. The Common Core education standards are increasingly controversial, with considerable pushback across the country and here in New Hampshire. What is your assessment of the program, and what changes, if any, should be made moving forward?
Congresswoman, let's begin with you here.
Well, this didn't start with the federal government. I think, in all fairness, we have to say this did not start with the federal government. You know, states came together and looked at this. But I have some concerns about it, just like ultimately I decided that No Child Left Behind was not working, even though it was well intended. I have concerns about this as well. So, you know, I saw a couple little videos about how they're teaching, and some of it looked good, some of it didn't look good. I think it would be perfectly legitimate to have this conversation on every level now before we immerse ourselves too deeply in it. But we do need to know one thing, that we have to make sure that our children are prepared to compete in this world. And we are not number one in education. I wish that we were, but we're not. And so we have competition all around the world. So we really need to really beef up our science, technology, engineering, and math, and that's what this is intended to do, and to develop critical thinking skills. So clearly there's a lot here that's good. There's some that is troublesome.
Thank you, Congressman. Congressman.
Well, I oppose Common Core. I didn't hear Carol Shea Porter say that. I absolutely oppose it. Families, teachers, administrators, superintendents, I have talked to across the district and across the state, are in growing numbers opposing this mandate. This is the fundamental problem with the federal government being too involved in our everyday lives. I think Carol Shea Porter tends to think that the federal government can be the answer to everything. I disagree. The federal budget for education is about $85 billion. We have 99,000 school districts across the country. There's no reason to treat every school district across the country the same. And that's what education policy is doing in this country, and Common Core is doing the same thing. We don't treat Rochester and Manchester the same. We shouldn't be treating all of these school districts the same with the top-down mandates. We are a local control state. Republicans and Democrats believe in local control. I'd like to put my faith in the school boards in the state of New Hampshire, not the bureaucracy of Washington, D.C.
Congresswoman, a very short rebuttal if you want.
And I believe in local control also. And what I said was that I was concerned about a number of elements there. This did not come from the federal government, let me say that again. But I am concerned about how this is playing out. So I think that, you know, pause and have a look at this and make sure that we're getting what we need and we're delivering what we need to deliver. So it can't be all good and all bad. And I think that's what we need to look at and say what works and what doesn't. But we need to be able to make changes when we find out it's not working.
Paul, I think it's very simple. We've had Common Core in the state long enough to know that it is not working. People don't like it. I don't understand why Congresswoman Shea Porter won't draw a clear line and oppose Common Core. I oppose it. It's something that most teachers, again, students, families, administrators, superintendents are opposing in our state. It's another clear difference between the two of us.
Thank you both very much. Let us move on. And Laura, a question from you.
Thanks, Paul. I want to ask both of you about drug addiction and heroin in particular. We now have more Granite Staters dying from drug overdoses than traffic deaths. In addition to the human toll, the cost to our economy of substance abuse is estimated in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Heroin addiction, as I'm sure you both know, is a big part of that. How would you, as a member of Congress, help New Hampshire tackle this?
Congressman, let's begin with you.
Well, thank you very much. As a mayor of our state's largest city, I had to deal with not just violent crime, but also property and drug crime. They are all interrelated. So you have to have a local, state, and federal approach. One of the first things I would do when I return to Congress, if I'm fortunate enough to be your member of Congress, is to work through the appropriations process of Commerce, Justice, State, and return dollars back to New Hampshire to utilize through our communities in the state of New Hampshire so we can eradicate this problem here in New Hampshire. It has to be not just a federal issue, it's got to be dealt with on a state and a local issue as well.
Congresswoman.
Well, this is a good question for me because I was a social worker for many years, and the reality is that we never properly funded this. We just didn't have treatment centers. As a matter of fact, we closed so many treatment centers around the country. So now we've got this huge problem. We know that. So we have to work on prevention, but we also need to take care of those who are. That's one of the good things I think about the expansion for Medicaid, because people will have access to health care. We also need the drug courts. We need to do the intervention. So when you pick somebody up and they've just shoplifted at, say, Walmart or Walgreens, look at them and figure out, ascertain if there's a reason that is drug-related and get them into early treatment. And I've talked to a number of police officers in various communities, and they all agree that we really need to focus more resources on this. This is a really bad time to go cutting programs that treat people who have addictions.
Drug dealers in this state are a significant problem, and I don't think Carol Shea Porter understands the severity of the issue. When I talk to chiefs and police officers who put bulletproof vests on each and every day, they tell me that their lives are in danger because you're talking about drug dealers who are armed, who are dangerous. These are individuals we have to go after and put away. Treatment is her proposal of treatment just doesn't eradicate the drug problem here in the state of New Hampshire. We've got to take this on and take it on tough. We've got to protect our citizenry, and that means getting rid of the drug dealers in the state of New Hampshire.
Laura, I want to go back to you. I believe you have a follow here.
Well, I did want to ask you, Congressman Ginta, about the Affordable Care Act. Under the act, I think Carol Shea Porter mentioned this, that Medicaid will, for the first time, cover substance abuse, and people in this field say, boy, that's a welcome development. I wonder what you think. Is it a welcome development? Will it help people struggling with this?
Well, again, Carol Shea Porter believes that there is a top-down approach, the federal government or nothing. I disagree with that approach. when you look at the Affordable Care Act in the state of New Hampshire, again, 22,000 people lost their insurance. We just read in USA Today this past Sunday that another 70,000 people in the state of New Hampshire in November are going to lose their coverage. This is not the intent of me or originally what people had focused on in terms of trying to reduce cost and increase coverage. There are things that you can do in a free market approach. Again, purchasing across state lines, number one. Transparency is critical. We did that when I was mayor. You saw the costs come down voluntarily, not done legislatively. And allowing to pool those three things we could do and have more money in the system to be more effectively utilized.
Thank you, Congressman. Congressman?
Well, addicts don't have money to buy health insurance, and so, you know, we have to take care of them. It's in our best interest for our safety. And I want to say that I absolutely support the police, and I know that they need more support. I have voted for every program that would help them, including putting more cops on the street, making sure they had the equipment that they needed to do this. So it's simply false to suggest that somehow or another, if I believe in treating, that I'm weak on law enforcement. I'm strong in law enforcement, and I'm strong on treatment. And I'm speaking from a lot of experience as a social worker, seeing families come in and they are decimated by drug or alcohol abuse, and they lose their homes, they lose their apartment, they have to move frequently, they can't keep jobs. There's a big problem out there. We need to take care of it.
Thank you both. We saved a little time in this debate for each of you to ask a question to the other. So I'm going to start right now. And Congresswoman, it's your chance to ask your Republican challenger a question.
Okay. Frank, are you sorry that you voted against all of those programs that made the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard suffer and they had to furlough people, that hurt the National Guard, that hurt the military readiness? I sit on the Armed Services Committee and hear them come in all the time saying the impact that it had. Would you change your vote for that now, or would you go right back and support the Republican study group, which wanted to slash federal budgets 30%? And do you still also think that we should abolish the IRS, and therefore we wouldn't have any income coming in?
Well, let me take the sequester question first, and then I can answer the IRS question next. The sequester, again, was the idea and the mandate of the President of the United States and Harry Reid, the leader of the Senate. They held the House hostage and said, if you don't vote for cuts in defense, the government will shut down. You would have voted that way, you would have voted to shut down the government. We kept the government functioning, found a middle ground on budgeting, and then back in the House voted not once, not twice, but three times to replace the sequester reductions. Harry Reid refused to take it up. That's the part of the problem in this country, that things aren't getting accomplished, because you don't have the legislative branches willing to work with one another. In this Congress, and I've said this quite a bit, 285 pieces of legislation passed in the House of Representatives, 90% passed bipartisanly, the Senate's taken less than 30 votes. That's a fundamental process problem with Washington, D.C., and this is why people are so frustrated with Washington, D.C. Relative to the IRS, I don't think many people like the IRS. People are frustrated with the IRS. And I think one of the fundamental challenges with the IRS is that they take advantage of people, of taxpayers. They are going after individuals and groups. And what's frustrating is that on your disclosure, you have both benefiting from a pension and a salary. You also took $10,000 from the IRS PAC, and then you voted in favor of IRS subsidies. That is something that the American people are frustrated with, and it's something that we have to change.
Before we get to your chance to ask her a question, I think
he didn't answer my question. Yes. So first of all, there's no IRS PAC, but let me ask you one more time, please. Do you still want to abolish the IRS? I want to reform it. You want to abolish it.
I understand why you want to. You voted against Lois Lerner.
I just need an answer.
You voted to support Lois Lerner, and you voted against eliminating the lavish parties and the lavish money that the IRS has been spending. I think you did that because you took $10,000 from the IRS union PAC, and you're benefiting, according to your disclosure, from a salary and a pension at the same time.
I want to
save That's
some time.
The kind of frustration that people have in this country that can, ought to be eliminated.
Can I get an answer to that? Would you? You've been saying you want to abolish the IRS. Do you still want to abolish the IRS, or do you want to reform it like I do?
Okay. I've answered the question.
Okay. Time for your question to Carol Shea-Porter.
Why do you continue to support Obamacare when the latest this Sunday is that 70,000 people in the state of New Hampshire in November are going to have their policies canceled? And why would you continue to ask for President Obama to come and campaign for you in the state of New Hampshire?
Okay, well, I didn't ask the president to come and campaign for me in the state of New Hampshire, okay? People didn't lose their policies, as you know, and if you don't, you could look it up, okay? Go to PolitiFact and look it up. So you have so many statements that simply aren't so that I just, I'm pretty surprised.
Well, the USA Today article on Sunday says that in November, 70,000 people in the state of New Hampshire are going to lose their, can't have their policies canceled.
Frank, why
because
do you,
of
let
the
me
Affordable
ask
Care
you,
Act, why do you
why,
continue to support
why are
people
you,
losing their insurance here in the state of New Hampshire?
Let me ask you a question. Why are you okay with people not having insurance? Why are you okay with allowing insurance companies to discriminate in pre-existing conditions? You were in Congress, you kept voting to repeal. You never voted to reform or fix. You have voted repeatedly to repeal health care. Why are you okay with them discriminating against women and charging more? Why are you okay with people being unable to get insurance or to pay for
Congresswoman.
It? I don't understand why you're okay.
Thank you. Congressman?
I voted to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. New Hampshire opposes this piece of legislation that you supported, you voted for. You actually looked people in the eye and said, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. That is not happening in the state of New Hampshire. It's not happening in your own hometown of Rochester. It's not happening in Portsmouth. These are significant population bases in the 1st Congressional District. And I think you owe the people an explanation, particularly in November, when 70,000 people are going to lose their policies yet again in the state of New Hampshire.
You never voted to repeal and replace. There's never been a replace vote. You have voted continuously to repeal it, and that probably is the last word.
Congresswoman,
right?
Thank you both very much. Let's do something very quickly and try to change the conversation a little bit. I want to ask you both a question, a very short answer from both of you. If you had a chance to have dinner with anybody, living or dead, who would that person be? Congressman.
I would love to have dinner with George Washington. I think the founding fathers were phenomenal individuals who had vision for our country, and I would love to be able to spend a moment with someone like George Washington.
I'd love to have dinner with my parents again.
Thank you both very much. Tomorrow night, a gubernatorial debate with Maggie Hassan and Walt Havenstein. On Thursday, the U.S. Senate candidates Gene Shaheen and Scott Brown will discuss the issues as NH1 teams up with CNN. All of these debates will be live on WBIN from the studios of NH1 here in Concord and simulcast on New Hampshire Public Radio from 7 to 8 p.m. We'd also like to hear from you if you have questions for the candidates. Send them to us via Facebook, shoot us an email, news@nh1.com. I want to thank Congressman Frank Inta, Congresswoman Carol Shea-Porter again for tonight's debate, and thank you at home for watching.